Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively the Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.
Hey guys, it's Albert. We got a fantastic show for you this week to preview the 2020 NFL season. Yes, it's here after everything we've been through, less than 48 hours away. Gresh is in to make predictions with us, predict division winners, predict the Super Bowl winner, predict awards winners. Then we got a great special guest coming in to kind of give us a feel for what all this is going to look like and how the football itself might be a little different in 2020. And then, as we always do, we wrap things up with all of your questions in the six pack. Let's go. All right, welcome back in. We made it. It's hard to believe it's here. When you listen to this, the NFL season will be starting in one day, in a little over 24 hours. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. And, you know, we're going to jump right into this. We do have a guest coming. We'll get to your mail, all of your questions in the six pack. We're going to bring Andy Gresh in right now. And Gresh, as somebody who loves this sport, who played this sport, you know, there were some points over the last 4 or 5 months when I think this was touch and go. And when I may have told you, I don't know if they're going to be able to start on time. And so I think the result, getting where we've gotten based on the greater conditions in our country and all the challenges that the NFL was facing, this is an outstanding result. Like, and I've been critical of the league about things in the past. I don't know how you can give them anything less than an A for the job that they've done, finding a way to keep the coaches safe, finding a way to keep the players safe, finding a way to keep all the personnel around their teams, the trainers, the doctors, the equipment people, all those people healthy and safe. I think it's, they've done a great job, and that's why we are where we are on the doorstep of Chiefs Texans on Thursday night.
And I don't think we can undersell that, because there was the questions that you and I and a lot of people around the game had of, are these guys going to be able to control themselves? And we're also living in a time where some of the places that they would go, these dens of iniquity or wherever, that could be places where it would be spreading COVID all over the place, aren't open. So that helps as well. But there's no question, Bert, the biggest challenge moving forward is still going to be the discipline of the players and keeping them safe so that these games can get played on time. And to this point here, I know that you and I are zooming it up, but knock on wood, it's been good so far.
No question. And I, you know, as far as the challenges ahead go, I'm with you, Gresh. You know, you mentioned, and I'm glad you said that, like, the, it's not only the responsibility of the players, it's also like kind of like what all these guys are faced with, right? So over the next few weeks, and really starting right now, players are adjusting their lives. They're coming out of camp mode where basically football consumes everything. And for a lot of the players now, they have a little bit more free time once the regular season starts. They're going home at a more normal hour. You get later in the week and they're actually going to have some time off. And so, you know, that introduces new things and new challenges into all of this. Coaches will have their kids going back to school. Older players will have their kids going back to school. Maybe some people's wives go back to work. Like, so they're not out of the woods. You know, I think you're still kind of, everything here is sort of still riding on what happens in the country as a whole, but they've cleared some hurdles now. I don't think travel's as big a deal as everybody makes it out to be. I mean, these guys aren't exactly like schlepping through Terminal B, you know? So have anybody seen the way NFL teams or pro sports teams in general travel, you know, like, they go through TSA basically at the practice facility or the stadium. They're,
They get on a bus. That bus goes straight into the tarmac. They climb on a plane. They get off the plane. There's a bus waiting on the tarmac for them there. That bus with a police escort takes them to their hotel. Generally, they'll have their own exit and entrance, their private entrance into the hotel. Sometimes it'll be through the back. And, you know, then the area of the hotel that they're in is basically cordoned off from everyone else. So, and these trips are 24 hours. That's the other part of it. So I don't know that that's going to be as big a challenge as everybody makes it out to be.
Well, it's those trips that would normally be longer. So if you're an East Coast team and you're going to play the LA Chargers on a Sunday night, you know, that's where it ends up getting a little tricky, is where you get the extra day. To your point, I think leaving the facility and getting to the city you're going, that's not a big deal. I'm with you.
Yeah.
Then it's trusting the bus company in another city, the hotel in another city, where you're getting your food from. That's where I think people on the outside look at it and they're like, wait a minute, how are they going to get all that set up? But at the end of the day, you can throw dollars at every problem. That's the great thing about the NFL, is they're not going to get shut out of the nicest hotels in Southern California because they don't have the money to be able to pay for it.
Right. So, all right, we've talked about COVID so much this offseason, Gresh. I wanted to really focus on football here and what's ahead and the 5 months that we have coming to us, again, starting with Houston playing in Kansas City on Thursday night. And so instead of doing the takeaways this week, I figured what we do is we do a prediction show. And this will be in conjunction with the predictions that we have up on the website at themmqb.com. So you can check those out there, I promise, because I have mine up. Mine will match what is up on the website, which is a big thing for me because I would be very prone to saying one thing one place and one thing another place. So we've got that taken care of.
I'm so glad you said that about yourself. That is fantastic.
You know how it goes, though. Sometimes you get put in these spots where you're like forced to sort of say something or forced to make a prediction. And I, like, you know how that goes, right? Like, it's like, wait a second. Well, so where did I, and I've been on like the radio at times where it's like, and I know you've been there, where you made a prediction somewhere else and then you're racking your brain. Like, what was that prediction that I made like a week and a half ago? And then doesn't wind up matching up with what your prediction was a week and a half ago.
Yeah, very much so. I try not to go through that. I try to double check that stuff. Yeah. But again, that's the whole, again, you're a reality show unto yourself, being Albert Breer, going on in Cleveland and all these other places and ripping the Big Ten. I mean, come on. No wonder you're spitting out so much hot fire. No wonder why you get confused in betwixt and between.
I mean, the reality of the situation, and I think this can kind of cover me, right? I say a lot of things. All right, so we're going to jump into the predictions now. I figure, Gresh, the way we'll do this, we'll talk about the playoff field in each conference, then we'll go through award winners. And we'll start in the AFC. And, you know, I want to start with the two divisions that'll be in play on Thursday night. So let's start with the West. I have one team coming out of the West, and it's the only division in the AFC I have that doesn't have a second team. I do think they're going to cannibalize each other a little bit in that division. I think the Raiders will be competitive. I think the Chargers are going to be competitive. The Broncos are obviously feisty too. Here's the thing about the Chiefs, though. I can't remember. So I'm doing this quarterback poll that's going to be up on the website on Thursday. And I do this every couple of years where I ask coaches, scouts, executives, like, okay, give me who you think the top five quarterbacks in the league are going to be at the end of the year, which I think is an interesting question, right? Mm-hmm. I have 32 ballots back, right? Like, I think I went to about 60 guys. Patrick Mahomes was number one on 31 of them.
Wow.
Like 31. And these aren't like, this isn't me and you talking. This is like coaches, like, he's what, 25 years old?
Well, 25. Let's just go mid-20s.
He's 25 years old. I can't remember, I want to ask you if there's precedent for this. I can't remember the last time there was a quarterback that young who was uniformly seen as the best player in football, and who, if you asked almost anybody, they would tell you he'll be the best player in football 5 years from now, too.
So I'm racking the brain and trying to think of a quarterback that would have been in that spot.
I mean, Marino, but I was too young to remember that. Maybe when, like, way back.
Well, that's the thing. I'm trying to think of a modern day reference because
Peyton Manning, maybe. Well,
even when
Manning had Brady like next to him,
well,
so
but there. Well, what I was going to say is maybe Manning, but the circumstances between Pat Mahomes and Peyton Manning were also very different. Like we knew Peyton Manning was going to be really good coming into the league. Whereas with Pat Mahomes, there was still the question of, okay, this guy didn't play right away, all that stuff. So that's a tough comp. Like I was trying to go down the road of like Roethlisberger, but Roethlisberger was never thought of as the best quarterback in the league. You're right, Bert. You might have to go back to the 80s and maybe Marino because they made that Super Bowl splash early in his run there.
Right, right. So that's a long way of saying I think the Chiefs, as competitive as that division is, I think the other three teams beat each other up, and I think the Chiefs beat those three teams up. I have a hard time seeing where the Chiefs, their defense was ascending at the end of last year. Mecole Hardman's a year older. You've got so much speed already with Watkins and Hill. You add, like, just I think a guy who's a perfect fit in Clyde Edwards-Helaire. They're really good on the lines of scrimmage. Outside of a serious rash of injuries, I don't know what derails the Chiefs right now.
I would agree with you. And when you look at the division, I'm not going to knock the rest of the division. I'm just going to look at Kansas City compared to everybody else. And they're way better than the rest of that division there. And you're right. Unless there's a catastrophic injury, it's hard to envision Kansas City getting derailed. But we know that weird things happen, especially after you play that, when you play those extra playoff games, they do take a toll on your body. And luckily for that team, they're not at that point of attrition yet where that's something that you really have to worry about. But that said, I mean, unless the quarterback goes down, and even then, I feel like they would find a way to be able to patchwork it and figure it out, almost like what New Orleans had to do last year.
Yeah.
You know, if God forbid Kansas City had to do that, I think they could survive. But I'm with you. I don't think there's much discussion in the AFC West.
Okay. And we'll move over to the South now, where I'm picking the Texans to win the division again. And, you know, this one was tough because I do think that division is going to be competitive outside of Jacksonville. I think the Titans are good. I think the Colts are good. So here's a little bit of a curveball for you. I have the Colts as the second playoff team in that division. And I like where the Texans are from an alignment standpoint. Here's what I mean by that. I think like over the last few years, they've been very talented, but you've had like your Jadeveon Clowney's and your DeAndre Hopkins's who were sort of on the, let's just say they were on the fringes of the program, you know? And that's why I think Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby and those guys hesitated to pay them. Now they've reinvested, and you look where they've spent their money, right? Nick Martin, Bernardrick McKinney, Laremy Tunsil, Zach Cunningham. It's guys who play like inside the tackle box and then the quarterback, right? And it's guys who line up with what they're looking for in players. And then you look how they replaced, how they went about replacing Hopkins. They brought in Brandon Cooks and Randall Cobb, who are pros, right? And I'm not saying every one of the moves was a stroke of genius, but I do think that that's a pretty aligned place right now. And I think that having more balance in what he's looking at around him, Watson, and I'm not saying losing Hopkins, you're better for that, but I think they've got better balance around Hopkins now, where, or around Watson now, where he's got a chance to play point guard a little bit more. And I just like look at it and I'm like, this could be like an 11 or a 12 win team that everybody's sort of overlooking now because they've let a couple of sort of big shiny pieces walk out the door.
Yeah, and look, the quarterback changed everything, right? Like once Watson got there, Bill O'Brien started to realize, I've got a guy who has the ability to do for me in this offense what Brady did in the New England offense early on in terms of spreading it around to everybody, the proverbial throat to the open guy. And it doesn't mean you don't want great wide receivers like DeAndre Hopkins, but they're going to demand the ball more. And look, Houston to me, Bert, is just that comfortable 10 or 11 win team They'll probably lose to Cincinnati or Jacksonville along the way. And then they'll, you know, who knows, maybe they upset Kansas City on opening night. That to me is the real issue with the Texans. They can play up or they will play down at times. When are the Texans going to get to the point to where this is who we are all of the time? So when we backslide, it's not as bad, but we still find a way to be able to climb the ladder to be able to maybe beat somebody in an AFC championship
game. And eventually they're going to, that's the thing, is that they've made the playoffs pretty consistently. And I don't think there's any argument with the job Bill O'Brien's done on the field. Like, right, you can argue with some of the personnel moves, but on the field, they've been pretty consistently good since he got there. I'm with you. Like, eventually you have to break through and you have to get to the level of making the conference championship game. And that pressure is going to be on him more now than ever because he does have the GM title. The second team I have, and I see you have them too, Greg. You have, wow. I'm looking at your prediction. You have three. Yeah,
three out of that division there, because I am also a believer in how you finished. And I think for Tennessee, there's going to be a tangible carryover. And Bird, off of what you just said there about Houston, that's to me how I see Tennessee. Once they made the decision on the quarterback and they said, we're comfortable with Ryan Tannehill, he can do what we need him to do. See, I thought, quite honestly, Bird, Tannehill was never going to win that group over because they had the old New England PTSD and that, oh, this guy stunk. We ate him up every time we played against him. Why would we want this? Why do we think we can win with this guy? And Tannehill went in there and won them over. So I do think there is a carryover to Tennessee. And you and I didn't get into this, and I'm sure we will. This division is very tough because I know you and I are also feeling really good about the Colts as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you have three playoff caliber teams in this division. And I think for all of their sakes, you know, I'm sure each of those three are hoping they're the one that rises, when in reality, they may all just beat each other up and end up at 10 or 11 wins.
So my one reservation with the Titans is, like, this is the other thing I try to look at. Like, last year, career year from Ryan Tannehill, career year from Derrick Henry, like, pretty good health across the board. They lose Jack Conklin on their offensive line. Okay, he wasn't the most consistent guy, and he had injury issues. They got a huge rookie year out of A.J. Brown. Can he follow that up? And then defensively, they lose Logan Ryan. I look at some of the things there where it's like, did they have the right, like, and I think they're going to be competitive again. I don't know if they get back to the same level. Now, I would say this about Indy. One of the reasons I have Indy in there is because I remember the way everyone was talking about them a year ago. Like, they were the next, and I said it myself, they had dynasty potential. Losing Andrew Luck is an enormous, enormous blow to that. There's no question, right? Like, and I'm not minimizing that in the least, and that definitely should make everybody look at them differently. That said, a lot of the reason why there was so much, a lot of the reason for there being that sort of optimism around them, like, look at the way they were drafting. Quentin Nelson and Darius Leonard were first team all pros rookies. That's unheard of, right? The offensive line was fixed in like a year under Chris Ballard. Frank Reich had proven himself to be a really good coach. He's built a strong staff. That staff returns intact. You know, now, like, they've gotten to the point where they've built out, like, the lines of scrimmage. They trade for DeForest Buckner. And I like their draft, too. I mean, drafting Michael Pittman and Jonathan Taylor, two just hard-nosed, tough guys who are going to set the tone at those positions. I sort of like what the Colts have going on. And it sucks that they lost Luck, you know? Like, that really blows, like, to be in that position where you've got to start over at quarterback. But, you know, at the very least, I think they've got a really good program going where you've got a good placeholder now in Phillip Rivers, sort of similar to like the Chiefs when they were building and they had Alex Smith as their placeholder.
So, Bird, here's my thing with Indianapolis. I'm looking at them and I'm kind of playing the schedule game here a little bit with Indy and thinking that they're going to make the postseason. So if the Colts are the Colts, here are their first six games: at Jacksonville, home for Minnesota, home for the Jets, at the Bears, at the Browns, home for the Bengals. I think that's 5-1 for them. And then they're at the bye. and then everything starts to change a little bit, and you look at them, then they play the Lions, then they get the mix of the Ravens, the Titans twice, they get Houston in there, they got to play Las Vegas. My whole point of this is that I think they're going to get off to a good start. That will change some expectations in that building a little bit. It might lead them to going out and acquiring some talent to help them. And when you're playing Tennessee twice, I know they're in the division, but you're playing Houston and Las Vegas in a crossover, at least one of those teams is going to be somebody that you need to bump to maybe end up making the playoffs as a wild card. And if they start 5-1, 10 is not unattainable for this team.
And I like, here's the other thing I would just mention that I think is interesting that you pointed out there. Getting off to a good start could be important this year.
Yep.
This has been a long year for everybody, right? Like, and I just think part of it there's part of me that's like kind of like looking at this and saying, if you start out 1-3 or you're 2-4, like how much does the wear and tear of just this year in general on everybody, does it break the will of some people? You know, I just think it's an interesting thing to watch going forward. Also, you like this division, Gresh. Well, if this division is as good as you think it is, maybe it'll help Jacksonville wind up with a certain quarterback with long hair.
Oh, that's right. So if you're in Jacksonville, you could be rooting for the old Dabo, 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 Double Dabo there and get yourself some Trevor Lawrence in, maybe some Dabo Swinney. Listen, in all seriousness, just quickly on that Jacksonville thing, if I'm going to throw $12.5 million at somebody from college to run my organization, I'm taking a run at Saban first and then going for the coach connected to the quarterback that he just happened to successfully recruit and has about a 3-year relationship with. At least
Dabo's pretty good, though. Dabo's pretty good.
He's great in the ACC. Yeah. I just don't want him picking my players.
Yeah. All right. So
he's got a better chance of recruiting players there than he does signing.
He's put together a pretty good pro. Like they've shown they can identify talent. Anyway.
Of course. And they write big checks. Oh, sorry.
We're gonna move to the AFC North now. I've got a lot of chalk here, but I'm going with the chalk, and I think Baltimore winds up winning the division. I think they've got like a lot of good things back. They have a coordinator, and I think Greg Roman's sort of an underrated piece to this. We've talked about how you have to move it forward and everything else when you play offense that way. Well, Greg Roman went through this once before with Colin Kaepernick in San Francisco. And so this isn't his first rodeo as far as the challenge that he's going to be facing as a coach. I think, you know, if you look around Lamar Jackson, the talent around him should continue to get better. The guys he was throwing to last year, like you had Mark Andrews, the tight end in year two. You had Hollywood Brown, who was a rookie. You had Miles Boykin, who was a rookie. At least on paper, Gresh, like those guys should continue to get better, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got that. Defensively, they're always going to be good. I took the Ravens to win the division. I think the Steelers are going to be right up their ass. So,
yeah.
I think the Steelers are going to be right there. I think this thing is going to be an old school from 10 years ago street fight for the AFC North because the Steelers finally fixed their defense.
Yes, and I'm with you. And I ripped the trade of Minkah Fitzpatrick. What are they doing giving up a first-round pick? Turned out to be absolutely the right move that gave them a chance last year to almost slide in the back door of the playoffs. Now, I have the Ravens winning the division. And again, on the whole schedule game, you look at the Ravens early on, it's not Cupcake Central. You know, they start with Cleveland, but they get Houston, Kansas City, Washington, Cincinnati, and then they get Philly and Pittsburgh that are not going to be easy. Then they hit the bye week. But, Bert, listen to the last four games for Baltimore. So Baltimore ping-ding-a-lings around a little bit, and they're 7-5. Listen to these last four. At Cleveland, home to Jacksonville, home to the Giants, at Cincinnati. And by the way, the game before that is Dallas. I'll refrain on crapping on Dallas right now, but that's a winnable game for the Ravens. Right. So down the stretch, in theory, they could go 5-0 and make a late push for either a playoff spot or to be able to win that division title, which I think they're going to do. I don't love what they do offensively. I think they can be beaten, but man, oh man, I think the taste that was left in the mouths last year of having such a great year, some of those dudes needed humbling. And they got it. And now let's see if they're better for it. And yes, Mark Ingram is one of those guys, in my opinion.
And I like the other thing that could be a factor in that division. I think Cleveland and Cincinnati could wind up being feisty at the end of the year. Like, I don't know where they're going to be at the beginning of the year, but they're the, like they may be those teams that are like lying in the weeds that like start like 2-10 and then finish 5-11. You know, it wouldn't shock me to see that from either of those teams.
And to your point, I think there might be a chance that Cleveland is a little more spunky early off of what we just talked about. Let's say, you know, they don't have a great year. That's the kind of team that I would be looking at, say, heading into December. Where are they mentally? Whereas with Cincinnati, I could see the reverse, that in the beginning of the year, they take it on the chin, but Burrow gets better, that team gets better, and then they finish strong. Cleveland would be a real good candidate. Let's say they're sitting there at 4-7 after 11 games. Are they going to go in the tank, or are they going to try to battle?
All right, that brings us to the AFC East, and this is maybe the most interesting division in the entire league, because you've got New England, where, you know, I would say this is about as uncertain a spot that they've been in since maybe the first couple of years of the Belichick era, which is almost 20 years ago now. It is 20 years ago now.
That's right.
And then you get the Buffalo Bills, who are wearing a target on their back for the first time. They are now the hunted instead of the hunter. And then you got Miami and the Jets, who've been on these like long play rebuilds. So you've sort of got three different teams that are in three different spots. I got Buffalo winning the division. I really believe in what Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean have built there. It's going to take, though, a step forward from Josh Allen. Lots of good talent there. Lots of good young talent there. Again, you talk about guys who should continue to get better. Tre'Davious White, Tremaine Edmonds, Ed Oliver, Matt Milano, Deion Dawkins, Stephon Diggs. Like, they've got a lot of ascending young talent. But Gresh, it's a different deal when you're all of a sudden now saddled with expectations. When it's not, oh, here's this little team that we didn't expect much of, and they're coming up and punching people in the mouth in November and December.
When it's, hey, we need to get back to the playoffs versus we're just trying to get to the playoffs, it's a different kind of climb. And I'm with you. Look, I do not have Buffalo making the postseason. They are not. Don't. Well, they're not going to tank out, but, well, you know, I just look at, here's the thing with New England that's interesting, right? So I have New England winning the division, and that's the only team out of that division that I have going into the postseason. And I know we're going to get to Brady later on and his effect and all that kind of stuff, but no one has talked about how Belichick can coach up Cam Newton on little stuff. Like, I did some breakdown of Cam. Ball on a slant route thrown to the inside versus the outside. Can mechanically they clean him up or hold him to a different standard? And I think that Cam Newton is going to be challenged in a way where if he can remain upright and healthy, and the Patriots offensively have to be a big part of that, that he has the ability to give more this year to get the Patriots where they want to go versus what Josh Allen can do. And you mentioned Allen. Yeah, there's a ton of talent there. But what is the ceiling for him as a quarterback? Because all anybody ever talks about with Josh Allen is great athleticism, great skills, great this, great that. When's he going to be a great quarterback and not just a great athlete playing quarterback? And that's where I keep getting hung up in terms of those two teams. I think Buffalo could win 9 and get shut out of the postseason maybe because of tiebreakers. I don't think they're going to tank. I just don't know if they have the one guy who's going to say, yo, get on my shoulders. We're going to get to 11 wins or we're going to get to 12 wins this year. It's not there.
I have the Patriots making the playoffs too. And this is weird for me because I have them as a 7 seed. I almost forgot. Gresh and I talked about this before the show that there was a 7 seed. But there is a 7 seed in each conference this year. And I think the Patriots have a lot of work to do. They're going to need young players like Juwan Bentley and Josh Uche to play at linebacker. They have an issue in the offensive line at right tackle. What do you do? The skill position talent, I mean, they're as inexperienced at receiver and tight end as they've been in a long time. And so there are lots of questions. But I think so much of the Patriots program is just sort of waiting for everybody else to F it up and for it to come to them. And so I think that's...
Let me just ask you this. Here's the early schedule for them, right? Miami, Seattle, Vegas, Kansas City, Denver. What's the worst they are out of that? 3-2? The worst?
Yeah, I could see. Well, I mean, Miami beat them at the end of last year, so I don't know. I don't know. I would just say this. Like, I think they get to 500 at least. And that's not me being bullish on the roster. I do think that they've work to do there. And this is going to have to happen at some point. They were going to have to get younger. And this is sort of the year where they feel that pain. I mean, like, and they're going to have a ton of money to spend next year and all of that. They're set up good as far as past this year. I just, you know, I think they get to 500. I'm not sure how far they get beyond that.
Interesting. Because I'm banking on the coaching. Now, do we need to give our 1-7 here for the AFC?
Yeah, so I'm going Chiefs, Texans, Ravens, Bills, Steelers, Colts, Patriots. You?
And I'm going Chiefs, Ravens, Texans, Patriots, Titans, Steelers, Colts.
Remember, now only one team gets a bye. So that's another big adjustment. We're going to jump right out over to the NFC right after this. 3-2-1. All right, we're back. We're going to go through the NFC right now. And Gresh, it's interesting because I look at the two conferences and I just, every year now, it feels like when I do the NFC, I'm leaving teams I don't want to leave out of the mix, right? And it doesn't seem like there's a lot of room for surprise teams because there are so many established teams. I would say at least two per division, right? And we'll get to who I left out here. But we're going to start with the sexiest division, right? The sexiest division, and that's the NFC South.
Oh, baby.
And I have the Saints winning it because I think as we've gone through all of this, I still think the Saints have the best roster in football. And it's a result of how well they've drafted over the last few years. But Gresh, you look at the number of young superstar players on that team. Marshawn Lattimore, Marcus Davenport, Alvin Kamara, Ryan Ramczyk, Mike Thomas. There are corners there. And this is going to be an issue for them going forward because who do you pay? Kamara obviously is one who's getting his. Thomas has got his. It's going to be tough for them to keep everybody. But they've drafted so well over the last few years that I look at it and I'm like, that's a more complete team with better cohesion. So I think the Bucs are going to compete with them. I have the Saints winning the division.
I have the Bucs winning the division because we're going to find out if a player as special as Tom Brady can have a LeBron James type effect on a football team. Because it's not just what he's going to do on offense. It's the hope. It's the standard he sets in practice. It's the fact that he walks on the field and everyone believes. You know, Bert, we just got done talking about New England and Cam Newton. With Cam Newton and the Patriots and where they're going to go, they're still going to be a bunch of guys who have been there who are like, okay, we know what Brady would have done. What's this guy going to do? And if it goes well, then they got a chance to maybe click early. I think with Tom Brady, when he walks on the field, yeah, there are guys that are in awe, and then it's everybody is going to get in line. And, yep, they've got offensive line issues, and they've got to blend, you know, what Brady does well with Bruce Arians' philosophies. But, my God, you talk about talent. I mean, yeah. Is there any team on the planet as loaded as Tampa Bay right now? And with weapons that Tom Brady knows how to move all over the chessboard. You and I saw for years what he was able to do with Gronkowski. But what's he going to do with not one but two wide receivers that he could line up at different parts of a formation, let alone what he can do with Gronk in the running game? We know that Howard, the tight end, is still there. I mean, they have so many pieces for Brady to move around. It's can they become cohesive enough to be able to do so? And I don't know about you, but something tells me Tom Brady is really going to enjoy playing for a coach that he can go over to the sidelines in the third quarter and be like, yo, we need to go for it here on 4th-and-2, and here's the play I like. And the guy would actually listen to him. It is going to be the most fascinating battle for a division in football, Bert, between New Orleans and Tampa, and I'm here for all of it. I think it's going to be awesome.
It is, and you know what's great is like this rivalry between the two quarterbacks. You know what the first time they played was?
That would have been would Breeze wouldn't have been in San Diego, or would it have been 03-04 with those two guys?
1999, Michigan and Purdue.
Oh, you're going back to Michigan. Oh, I'm sorry.
Michigan and Purdue. Yeah, Michigan and Purdue. How about that?
I didn't read my Big Ten dictionary today.
At the time, those two were in the Big Ten together. I was there, too. I was in the Big Ten also at that point in time.
So many jokes. But I'm
true, true story, too. That's 100% the truth. I'm not, no lies told. I was in the Big Ten also.
That's right. You're in a Big Ten state, man.
My activities might have been a little different than those two. But yeah, I was there.
I would agree. Hey, real quick on the NFC South. You mentioned the teams that you're like, oh, should I be leaving them off the list? Do you want to get in there? Atlanta was
tough for me.
Atlanta's the wild card in that division because if everything goes, I could see them. This is crazy. I could see them being 6-10, and I could see them being 10-6.
No question.
Such
no question.
There.
They're a tough one, and I do think like the one thing I sort of like about Atlanta. Like, so you saw these like quarterback camps or whatever, right? Like, and you'd see like guys like having, you know, they'll have the fellas down to Florida for a weekend and everybody's going to, you know, we'll go out to dinner at, you know, Prime 112 and, you know, have three sets of workouts and we'll get our continuity in order. The one thing that's interesting, like Matt Ryan ran like a full on off season program. And part of that's the advantage of being in Atlanta, right? Like that a lot of players happen to live there full time. So, you know, it works for you. But I'm telling you, Matt Ryan ran like a full-on 8-week off-season program. And Brady did something similar in Florida with his guys. And I have to think that counts for something. So it's just something I will kind of keep an eye on. Like, does it make a difference for Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones and, you know, even like a Todd Gurley who showed up a little late? Like, does it make a difference? Like, I think that has to count for something, right? Like, that you were... Like, so I think that Matt Ryan went to the trouble of like basically creating an 8-week, 9-week offseason program. I think it does matter. All right. The second division we're going to get to, I think, again, is another one of these is fascinating. And there's another team I really like here that I left out. And I wound up only giving this division one playoff team on the premise that I think they're going to cannibalize themselves. And you might have the records affected by the fact that they are beating the crap out of one another. And that's the other West division, the NFC West. I have the Niners winning it. I really believe in what John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan are building there. I think the Rams, the Seahawks, and the Cardinals are all going to be plenty competitive, though. And I like what the Rams did as far as, you know, Sean McVay kind of revamping his coaching staff. And I think McVay's got a little more control and juice in that building now. I like what, you know, the Cardinals have done in acting with some urgency to surround their young quarterback with weapons while he's on his rookie deal and getting DeAndre Hopkins in there, giving Kenyon Drake some money, drafting Josh Jones to play right tackle. They draft Isaiah Simmons to add to their defense, you know, and then Seattle. You know, I think Seattle's going to be competitive. And so I only had one team winning the division, but that doesn't mean I don't think highly of the group. That actually means I do think highly of the group because I do think that there's going to be some element of those three teams beating the crap out of each other.
And I've got two from this division going in. I have the Niners as the number one seed in the NFC. I think they're built perfectly for where they need to be right now relative to their division and some of the other really good teams in the NFC. I think it'd be crazy to not think that they were a Super Bowl contender. And I have the Seahawks sliding in. And, Bert, one of the real intangibles that I think has become tangible for Seattle is going to be that crowd noise, which we now know is going to be regulated by the NFL to where there isn't the emotional swing. You know, right. When you're getting ready to play Seattle, you're not ping-ding-a-linging around with putting in a bunch of silent signals and things of that nature. You can get to how do they attack us and really put all your time into the actual football part of it, not the mechanics or the running of football part of it. And I think that's going to be a big, big advantage for teams going into Seattle, and something that Seattle is going to have to find a way to be able to overcome and muster up their own energy when they need it, because it has been a force that the Seattle Seahawks have been able to
hard place into. To play. No question. I mean, it's a hard place to play because teams, they're far away from everybody, right? So for everyone, it's a trip getting there. They have the weather, which is weird and different. And, you know, like you could be playing in 45 degrees and drizzling and the ball's wet and all that different stuff. You know, and then you have the crowd noise, which comes out of it now. So it's going to be really interesting to see the way that plays out. The reason I the reason I have the Niners first, I want to mention this before we move on to the NFC North. The reason I have the Niners first is because I just think I believe teams that build through the lines of scrimmage are built to be in every game. Like, I just really believe in building that way. And I think as much as we make a big deal out of guys like DeAndre Hopkins getting moved, you know, and he's been moved into this division, I still think that it, like, ultimately, if you look at the teams who are there at the end, more often than not, they're spending on the lines. The Niners had a potentially dicey situation losing Joe Staley. What did they do? They traded for Trent Williams, who might be a better player, you know? And then they have on the defensive line, they lose to DeForest Buckner. Well, what do? They draft Javon Kinlaw. So I just look at the way they've managed that team and managed that roster, and to kind of keep feeding the strength of that team the way that they have, you know, I think it really sets them up, not just now, but to be competitive year after year after year after year. All right, the NFC North, this is the division, Gresh, where I think every team could finish within two games of one another.
Agreed.
This is the division where I think it could be 10-6, 9-7, 8-8, 7-9. I think all four of the teams are really close. I think the Vikings and Packers are good. I have both them making the playoffs. I'm not sure either of those teams are elite. And I have the Bears and the Lions being better than people think. Matt Stafford was playing at an MVP level at the end of last year. I think that roster is very well aligned now. What I said about the Texans, I think, exists with the Lions and drafting the way that they've drafted. They've got good, better young talent than I think people realize. Guys like Kenny Golladay and Taylor Decker and Jeff Okuda. So they've got good young players there. They've brought in some guys who have the ties to Patricia. And with the Bears, I don't think winning 12 games 2 years ago was a total fluke. I don't think they have to be great at quarterback. I think they just need Mitch Trubisky to drive the bus, you know? And so I think all four of those teams are really close. I give the Vikings and the Packers the edge, and I put both of them in the playoffs. But I think all four of these teams could be in the running when we get to December. And I don't think you're going to get a great team out of that division. I think you're going to get four pretty good teams.
I'm with you in that they could all be a game within each other, but it might be 9-7, 8-8. Because I don't buy Chicago at all. The fact that they're going to start Trubisky, you know, why'd you go out and make a move for Foles if you're just going to turn around and start Mitch Trubisky? And the reason you brought in Foles is because you got nervous about that guy anyway. So for me, that's one that I don't understand, but I was never sold on Mitch Trubisky to begin with. So for me, I'm crossing the old Bears off the list. The Lions are intriguing. Here's my mental block with them. It's the same with Buffalo. Oh, God almighty. How many more years do I need to hear about Matt Stafford and his unbelievable talent and this and that? Jeez.
Not just that, Gresh. He was playing really well last year before he got hurt.
And how many times have we heard that narrative? Oh, Stafford was playing great before he got injured because he gets hurt all the time. I can't buy into that guy. I don't dislike Matt Patricia. I think they brought in some core people who have the ability to provide some leadership in that room. But good God almighty, we're going to be 15 years from when Matt Stafford got drafted and they're going to make the playoffs. It's going to be like, oh, look, all that talent paid off. When at the end of the day, he is? In a way, there's a lot of Matt Stafford and Matt Ryan. I want him in fantasy. I don't want him on the field because
get down. So you say that, though. Matt Ryan did have the 1 year explosion, right?
Right. And so did Stafford, by the way.
I think
touchdowns, 15 picks.
I think Stafford has that year in him. Like, I think he has that year in him where all of a sudden the Lions maybe are a 10 or 11 win team, and he's throwing for 5,000 yards and 45 touchdowns. Like, I think that that's there. And so much of it's going to come down to how the pieces around him work. Like, is TJ Hockenson Gronk like they thought he was when they drafted him? Well, is Kenny Golladay a true number one receiver, which they believe he is? Like, it's just going to be a lot of those things. What does the backfield look like? Like, I think DeAndre Swift, when he gets healthy, could be a freaking game changer for them. So, like, they have, like, a lot of – it's just if those things come together, the way in Atlanta, Julio and Sanu and – and Taylor Gabriel and Devontae Freeman, the way all those guys came together for them that 1 year in Atlanta, if that happens, I think Stafford is capable of having that MVP bounce.
Interesting. Right. So for me, I've got Minnesota winning the division. Green Bay is a wild card. Here's my thought.
Me too. I'm with you. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah. Look, Green.
The Packers are my seventh seed again. There are seven seeds.
Yeah, and I have them as the six. If you look at the luck quotient, and I don't go too crazy on that, they had a lot of things go right their way last year. Normally, that doesn't happen 2 years in a row. But again, they've got a guy who has already proven, okay, I'll get us one or two extra wins because I have the ability to elevate and be special. And it is interesting that Jordan Love, the first round pick, was not named the backup, at least here for week one, which yeah. I'm sure a lot of Green Bay fans are saying, we won a lot of close games.
You know what, though? Year,
and our first round pick is sitting on the bench.
I sort of agree with that. The reason why I don't mind that, if you're really saying like you got to sit him, like, and it's what's best for him is to sit him, then he can't be the backup, right? Like, if you're really committed to that, if you're really committed, like we're doing what's best for the kid, right? And he's not ready to play, and it could be damaging to put him in games, then don't make him the backup. Because the backup is one... Now, emergency situation, you got to go to your third quarterback. It is what it is. But if you're really committed to, like, we're giving him all the time he needs, then I don't mind that at all. Like, that makes total sense to me.
So in your mind, he's better running scout in practice than he
is. Me saying that, though. It's like what every scout and coach said leading up to the draft, that like what he needs a couple years to learn. So
first, if you're going to on the scout team. Oof.
But you know what I'm saying? If the idea is it's what's best for him is to sit, right, then don't make him the backup. All right. Last division, NFC East. This is always an interesting division. I think New York and Washington, to me, are like, I think you could see some promising signs from them.
Giants.
I think the Giants are going to be feisty. Like, I don't know that we see an enormous leap from either of them. And I think the teams that are at the top of the division are good, not great. Like, I'd put them in that Vikings-Packers category. And I have the Eagles winning the division. I have the Cowboys as the wild card. The Andre Dillard injury, I think, is a sneaky big deal for the Eagles. Okay? I still have them winning the division, but I think that is a sneaky big deal for the Eagles because they're another one of these teams, again, where they're built through the lines of scrimmage, which, again, I think is the correct way to build. But here's the thing, Gresh. They've been so strong in that offensive line, right? So they lost Brandon Brooks, who was one of the best guards in football earlier in the offseason for the year. They bring in Jason Peters to replace him at guard. And now you got Peters in there. Well, Andre Dillard at left tackle gets hurt. So you're moving Peters back out to left tackle. So now that guard problem that you had crops back up again. And so I'm just sort of on alert for that. But I still think the balance of the Eagles roster is pretty good. I'm not where I was last year on it. Last year, I think I thought going in it was the best roster in football. I'm not there with them yet. I think it's good enough to win the division. So I have the Eagles as the 4 seed, and we'll go through the seeds now. I have the Cowboys as the 6 seed. So if you stack this up, I got Saints, Niners, Vikings, Eagles, Bucks, Cowboys, Packers.
And I have the Eagles winning the division. I don't have anybody else in this hot mess of a division making the playoffs. And this 4 seed may end up being an 8-8 team. that just gets, you know, wiped out by the number five seed, because, you know, my guess is that it's either the Bucks or the Saints that are going to be the number five. So that number four seed, you know, they might be in a whole world of trouble getting the best of those wild card teams. And as I'm sitting there listening to you talk about the Dillard injury, I look, who does Philly open the season with? At the Rams. Hi, Aaron Donald. I'll draft him this week for 2.5 sacks because he'll be eating people up on the inside. But this division, I mean, you know, again,
it's a little sad because it's like this is like the flagship division. This is like growing up, Gresh, you know, back when like CBS had the NFC package and it was Summerall and Madden. And this was like everyone growing up, like growing up in the 80s, you remember, these were the signature teams, the signature matchups, the 4 o'clock game on CBS, right? The 4 o'clock game on CBS on Sunday afternoons with Summerall and Madden there. And whether it was the late 80s or the early 90s, these were like the flagship franchises of the NFL. And I mean, they still have juice. Like they're still, you know, huge markets and popular teams and all of that, but it's just not the way it was.
No, it isn't. You have one named football team. You have another one where the owner is running things still. Hey, but let me tell you something. I got me a lot of town there. We're going to try to go. I ain't jacking around with you today. Old Jerry. Can't wait for those Tuesday morning phone calls to the local sports radio station for old Jared to run his whatnot as to why they're 8-8 for the 19th consecutive year or whatever it is. But yeah, this division is terrible. And more than likely, unless the Eagles completely stay healthy or find a way, they have the most talent in the division. I do expect the Giants to bounce, though. I like the way they're built. I think they could climb to 7-9 or 8-8, which would be a big climb from where they were last year.
Okay, we're going to go rapid fire now because we're running a little low on time. As expected, we've gone a little bit over here. So let's go rapid fire through our individual awards. MVP, you have?
Pat Mahomes.
I have Deshaun Watson. Offensive player of the year, you have?
Thomas Edward Brady Jr.
Wow. Quarterback. I'm going with Alvin Kamara from the Saints. Defensive player of the year, you have?
Darius Leonard of the Colts. Guys,
like that. Love it. I've got Nick Bosa from the Niners. Offensive rookie of the year, you have?
Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Again, when you're connected to the guy that I think is going to be the MVP, I think it's a natural pick.
Here's something to watch on Thursday night, too. All that speed clearing space out underneath, and there was no back in college football who was better in space last year than
Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
So I love the fit there. I'm going with Joe Burrow as the offensive rookie of the year. Defensive rookie of the year, you've got?
It kills me that you and I are sharing a brain and that it's connected to Ohio State, but Chase Young, because Washington's going to be awful and he'll be making a lot of plays.
And the defensive line there is really good. You know, it's sort of like from a defensive line standpoint, sort of similar to what Nick Bosa was walking into, tons of former first-round picks on that defensive line. And your coach of the year, Gresh.
This is finally the year without Tom Brady to get in the way that William Hoodsworth Belichick finally gets a just due award coming to him.
That's a good pick. I'm going with Frank Reich of the Colts because I have them making the playoffs, as does Andrew Gresh III. And finally, let's wrap this up with our Super Bowl pick. Who over who in Tampa in early February?
Oh, man. For the AFC Championship game, I have the Ravens over New England, who will pull an upset in what will be known as the Cam Newton game. The Bucks over the 49ers in the NFC title game. And I have the Bucks over... I wrote the Bucks over the Saints like an idiot. The Bucks over the Ravens to win the Super Bowl.
Wow. Tom Brady winning his 7th Super Bowl title at 43 years old. How about that?
The LeBron effect. That's what I'm banking on. It's the LeBron effect.
Okay. And I do think that is what he was looking for, going and getting a Leonard Fournette like at the last second. Totally exactly what they're looking for. Okay. Exactly what Brady was looking for. I am going, and I've got one pick that's the same as Gresh's and another pick that's from the same division. I'm going with the Ravens over the Chiefs to win the AFC Championship, and I'm going with the Saints over the 49ers to win the NFC Championship. So then I've got the Ravens like Gresh has coming out of the AFC, and I have an NFC South team coming out of the NFC just like Gresh does, but I have the Saints, not the Bucks, And I'm going with Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens to defeat the New Orleans Saints in Tampa. Lamar Jackson wins the Super Bowl in his home state. And the Saints come ever so close to getting Drew Brees' second championship, but fall just short. And I can't wait to see all this play out, Gresh. Like, I'm so fired up.
Hey, friend, like, we are finally here. We've all been sitting around. We've all been waiting. There, it's been a weird training camp. We don't have the same kind of buzz. My God, I can't wait for Thursday night.
Okay, he's Andrew Gresh III. Again, that's how he's known on this podcast. Gresh, always appreciate you coming out, and we will get to our special guest right after this.
All right, so to kick off the season, we're going to bring back one of our favorite guests, and my buddy, you guys know him from having played at Ohio State and first-round pick of the Cowboys, played 6-7 years in the NFL, I believe, and he is now a co-host of The Morning Juice, and this is a promotion, so this is important that I get this in here, Bobby. Co-host of The Morning Juice, which is the new morning drive show on 97.1 The Fan in Columbus. I think I have that right. Right, Bobby? Did I get everything right there?
You are correct. The Morning Juice, 6 to 9 on 97.1 The Fan. So thank you, Albert.
So there it is. You can also catch him on Get Up on ESPN during football season. And the reason we wanted to have Bobby on now is because he does have all that experience playing, and he played a very physical position. And that kind of takes us into where we are right now. We've got less than 48 hours to kick off of the NFL season, and it's been a very different run up for all players. There was no spring workouts, so that's OTAs, 8 weeks OTAs out the window, no mandatory mini camp, no rookie mini camp during the spring. And the summers looked very different. Normally, guys would be putting on pads in late July. The pads didn't go on for most teams until August 17th. There have been no preseason games. Really about 3 weeks of real camp this summer. And so, Bobby, I guess like the first blanket question I would have for you is, do you think that the casual fan is going to be able to notice that in any sort of way on the game field, either tomorrow night with the Chiefs and the Texans, or at any point during week one?
I guess I just look back a little bit to what I saw with Navy BYU on whatever that Monday night when that played. And Navy is a team of execution. And when you don't practice really in pads and you don't hit each other and you don't go live, like, you're going to have some execution issues. And Navy, BYU is probably better, but Navy looked atrocious. They didn't look like a typical Navy team, not like some of the best people that we have in our country that we're going to be sending off to defend us one day. Like, they did not execute well, and that is a calling card for them. And so I look at this season like, okay, what could this look like? What are some of the issues that could come up? Number one, I think some of the coaches are going to lean on more veteran guys who they know, they're comfortable with, they understand the scheme a little bit better. They have an easier time practicing and getting ready than maybe younger guys do who don't really understand all that. So I think that's a piece of it. You'll probably see some sloppy play. And because, you know, as much as people talked about, you know, during the off season and stuff, you know, limiting contact and getting away from pads all the time, and now you really have seen an off season that's void of any of that. You know, very, very little contact, very, very little practice tackling. And the tackling in the NFL has not been good as of late anyway. And so it's probably only going to get worse. Like, and so that'll be a casualty. I think you'll probably see some soft tissue injuries. Guys have been ratcheting up. They've been moving more, but I don't know if they've been truly tested. And they didn't have the preseason games. As much as we joke around about it, there's still an element there to playing at an elite level and playing against other people when the cameras are on and you're on a field and you're being judged that you cannot replicate. And so I think that you're going to have, you know, heightened awareness, heightened senses. Guys will get dehydrated. They're playing hard. And so you see the hamstrings. You'll probably see some groins. You'll see some Achilles, stuff like that. It'll creep up, I think, in the first couple weeks when it's going to be really hot and guys are going to be asked to go for 3.5 hours, something that they probably haven't done. And then lastly, and this is something that people kind of laugh at, I think you'll probably see substitution and special teams issues, because that's something that, you know, usually build through the preseason and you get the game reps and you understand this guy goes out, this guy comes in, these are situations you work on. And if you're going with guys who are younger who have never been in those, you're going to see some issues, because that's really the most complicated part of the game that gets neglected. And so I think, Albert, that's probably the last piece. There's just going to be some things that aren't as polished up. Like, and that's the reality. Like, It's going to be more like taking your car through, you know, the normal car wash that you just run it through, as opposed to taking it to a detail shop.
Do you think, so does that mean like that last part, does that mean like random timeouts? Like when you don't expect it and then the camera pans over and the coach is throwing his headset, like that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I think you're going to look out there and there'll be 10 guys on the field, or there'll be a guy that's misaligned. And, you know, you look at a coach like John Harbaugh, who majors in special teams. I wouldn't be surprised if he tries to throw some stuff out early in the season to test some of these teams who, you know what, the guys didn't get the typical reps in camp. They didn't get the typical work in the preseason games. And the challenge is to see if they can get aligned to something that isn't as traditional as maybe they're used to seeing.
All right. So I want to go back to the hitting part of this, because I think you sort of bridged two eras, right? Like you came into the league during kind of the old era, which was two-a-days kind of, you know, I think camp used by a lot, and you played for Parcells, so like camp used to sort of callous the team and toughen the team and get the team where it needed to be physically. And then you saw, and then, you know, you played past the 11 lockout, which is when a lot of those rules changed and two-a-days were done away with. And the way camp operated was just, I think forever different. So like having gone through that and having seen it like a couple different ways, like as a football player, how much do you really need? Like, and you see some of this now, like where they, I feel like the camps I was at, there was more 11 on 11 than I normally see, but it's really truncated into 3 weeks. How much like did you really feel like you needed as a pro football player to be ready to go week one?
I think box guys need it a lot. Like offensive linemen, they need it. You know, defensive linemen to a certain extent. I think there's an element there. And you mentioned bridging two eras. Like I came in, my freshman year at Ohio State was the last year in college that you could go two-a-days consecutively without having a break. And so I think we went like 13 straight days of two-a-days. And then we went to the 2-1 model. Then I get to the NFL and Parcells, you know, we're grinding. And, you know, then it started to ease up a little bit. And then after the, you know, 2010 season, after the lockout there in 11, then it's just one practice a day. And so I was a veteran at that point. I'm thinking if I had this for the last 4 years, I'd feel great. And so your body feels a little bit better, and guys that know how to do it and they understand the techniques, you know, I think that they need it less. But for young guys, especially when you talk about college now, like offensive linemen are severely underdeveloped, Albert, when they come to the NFL, because all they do is line up zone right, zone left. It's all, you know, the zone option, the read, zone read stuff, you know, the YP or the RPOs. And there's not any technique development. And that's why you see these ridiculous scores that are in the 50s. There's no defense. It's not real football. And I know the NFL has adopted some of that, but the margins in athleticism are much slimmer, so you can't do a lot of the same things. And so I think young offensive linemen, like rookies coming in and asking them to do this, like it's going to be a lot more difficult, and especially guys that you're looking at as developmental players. Like I don't think you can really even count this season. If you took a offensive tackle in the fourth round and you thought, hey, give him 2 years, he might be able to unseat our starter and we'll move on, I don't think you can count a year like this. So you might see some of these ramifications down the road.
So you look at like Tampa, for example, the fact that they're planning on starting Tristan Wirfs, who was, I think, seen as a little raw coming out of Iowa at right tackle, like, and one of the bookends protecting Tom Brady, like that could be a factor with somebody like that.
It absolutely could be a factor, because it isn't a situation where in college you can make up for a lack of technique with athleticism and strength. In the NFL, like you get the South and some of the guys, you know, Cameron Jordan, like, you know, when you get a hold of that guy, like he's big, he's fast, and he's really skilled. And so if you get something like that, like, dude, you can't just overpower that guy or cheat it. He has all the tricks and he knows everything. And so that's the stuff that those guys are going to be asked to do now.
What would you, like, if you were a coach right now, how do you think you would be managing your roster? I don't know if you saw this, but Josh McDaniel said something really interesting on Tuesday morning. It was something along the lines of, like, managing different guys. And he said, like, we haven't seen our guys in game conditions yet, and we don't know what a guy's going to look like when he's got to play 70 plays. So, like, you know, put your coaching hat on. You know, you've got that in your blood too. How do you think you would be managing players right now if you were a coach?
Number one, I would try to make sure I have as much depth on my roster as possible. And, you know, every coach says that, but I would be willing to trade some top-end talent to make sure that I had, you know, a full like five linebackers that would be able to play at any given point in time. Like, to me, that would be more valuable to be able to have three running backs you could go to, as opposed to maybe a rookie who, you know, you didn't have the time to develop any pass blocking skills. So while a guy may be able to run the ball, he never learned really how to pass pro in college, and he didn't learn how to pass pro in camp now. And so you need to have as many bodies, because you mentioned the 70 snaps. You need to be able to roll guys, I think. And you're going to have to be able to make sure that you have depth. And then the other thing is you need known quantities. This was not a time to be able to ask guys to kind of change positions, whether it's college to the NFL or even guys coming from one scheme to another in the NFL, because they didn't have the time to get that technique work in. I'm going with guys who I know, guys who I've seen in the same type of systems before, and we're just going to roll with that.
So do you think, like, I don't know, like, do you think if you were a coach that you'd be subbing more early in the year then? Like, would you be, like, because that was one thing McDaniels brought up too when he was saying this, was like kind of how, like, you know, he could see where teams are platooning more in general, because you're not like completely comfortable that a guy's in game shape yet because you haven't had a chance to have him out there in game situations. Like, do you think that you'd, like, you talk about building depth. Well, the advantage of building depth would be like, okay, like, I feel comfortable with eight offensive linemen instead of just the five we were starting. Like, do you think that, like, maybe you would consider rotating at positions where maybe you normally wouldn't?
No, I think that that's part of it. I don't, offensive lineman's line is
tough. That's tough because of communication, right?
There's a communication piece. There's a continuity piece, which that's why I thought that that's the most difficult position to get, to try to develop players and develop a team when you don't have any of those physical reps. And so I think that I would try to keep that as stagnant as possible, but any positions that you could rotate, and, you know, the mid-level vet has kind of been eliminated from the NFL. If there was ever a time to try to keep guys that you think could be good rotational starters, this was the year, especially if you think you have a team that is built to win, because you'd much rather have a guy in his sixth, seventh year who maybe, you know, doesn't have the high end potential, maybe costs a little bit more than a rookie would, but you know that he can go out and give you 35 snaps and he's going to know what to do and he can play special teams and he doesn't need all that technique work.
I know you sort of hit on this already, but I do want to kind of dive a little deeper into the value of preseason games, because that's the most obvious thing we're losing, right? Like, so from a player standpoint, how valuable was that? And I'm going to play this into the whole comparison to college too, because I know that was one thing that a couple guys have brought up, where they said, you know, okay, like, well, I know Belichick brought this up. Well, you know, like, this is the way it is in college, like 3 weeks of camp and then you're into game week. I've had some guys push back on that. Like, you know, John Harbaugh said to me, well, that's true, but there's an entire ramping up over the course of the summer that the college programs are doing that you're not really counting for when you're just talking about camp. So, like, for you, the first question, I guess, off of that would be, what was the value of preseason games? Like, did you, when you were a player, did you want to play in the preseason games?
When I was young, my first couple of years, I thought it was really necessary. And even as a vet, I didn't mind, you know, getting, you know, two or three series, four series in. Did I want to go out there and play an entire game? You know, probably not. But if I could get, you know, a quarter and a half, two quarters in, you know, I felt pretty good about that, especially handling situations, because it's the first time in practice. You do move the ball drills, but a lot of times you're working on, all right, you know, it's first down or it's run period, or we're going to do third down stuff now. But being able to transition from first down, okay, we got them in second and long. Okay, what are they going to run here? All right, well, now it's a third and short. Now what is the stuff that's coming? And you have to continue to digest this information over and over, and that's the only way that you can kind of do it while you're being fatigued and while you're being tested. And then you're also going up against players that you don't, you may have scouted, but you don't really know exactly how they move and how they operate. You practice against the same guys all the time, and you get to see some of their tells. And, you know, getting a chance to play against some really good tight ends, whether it's Jason Witten, you know, Rob Gronkowski, Aaron Hernandez, guys like that. I mean, you got to see some of their tells. And so guys in practice could guard them probably better than the people at large just because they saw them all the time. And so seeing somebody different, and you mentioned preseason games, a lot of coaches like those joint practices better. But those were eliminated too, Albert. Like, so those working situational issues there was eliminated. And then to jump to this, you know, the college aspect, the ramp up is totally different because they have 15 padded practices you can have in college in the spring. Yeah. Like, that doesn't exist in the NFL. There's no time off. The coaches dominate your time. Like, And so you're leading in, and college still starts out a little bit sloppy. We still see a ton of issues usually for the first 3 weeks.
And you're not playing, like, you know, no offense here to anyone, but like, you're not playing Kent State, you know, or you're not playing South Alabama, or you're not playing, like, you know, you're not playing like Air Force in week one.
Bruce DeHaven, the late great special teams coach, who was with me in Dallas, Carolina, a long time in Buffalo, he said there are no homecoming games in the NFL. You know, he looked at me, he's like, Indiana isn't on the schedule, Bobby. And I like laughed at him. You didn't really know what that meant until you got in the NFL and think, even a team that's 2-14, at the end of the year, they won two games, and sometimes they beat teams that were 9-7 or 10-6.
Right. And like, it's just, it's, yeah. I mean, so that part of it's definitely different. The other thing I thought was like I wanted to ask you about before we get you out of here. Do you think that, and like, you made such a great point the last time we had you on about like maybe discipline slips a little bit with the COVID stuff for, you know, a guy who starts, you know, he's on a team that starts 1-6 or whatever. Do you think that there's a little bit, I don't know, like, it's just been a long year for everybody. You know what I mean? Like, do you think that there's a little bit of fatigue if you're a player right now in that you have had to go through all these measures to go into the building and you've been on the Zoom meetings since May? And like, I just wonder if there's a little bit, if you think that like you'll see a little fatigue from some people where, you know, again, if you're on one of those teams that starts out 1-3, it becomes that much harder to dig out of the hole because you are just kind of worn out by everything that we've all been through this year from a football standpoint.
I think that's a real part of it because this was kind of like a never-ending camp. Like, there were no preseason games to break up the monotony. You're going to be going through these extended measures, essentially. Like, imagine Albert every day, and you travel a lot, and you know, there's times where I've traveled a lot, but every day before you go to work and work a physical job, like going through airport security, like that's essentially what I feel like some of these players, like, they have to go through. And like, we can laugh about that, and like, people travel all the time, but I mean, it just psychologically wears on you. And so if you're not winning, or you're a younger guy, we talked about hitting the rookie wall because things just are elongated and it just wears you down. I think that might happen to some vets and teams this year where it psychologically exhausts you and you don't have any release. Like, you can't go out and relax and go and have a drink, or, you know, even heck, like going out to dinner with your wife, like, you know, you're worried that you may get it. And then, you know, who knows what can happen. And so when you factor all that in, it's like you're in camp that never ends. Like, you go to the facility and you go home, you go to the facility, you go home, you fly, you play a game at home, but you do that for 17 weeks. It's like Groundhog Day, man. And you saw Bill Murray at the end. I mean, he's driving cars off cliffs. Like, it gets a little bit of that in your mind.
Yeah, and I almost feel like that's why, like, so many guys go away during the bye week. You know, whether it's, you know, some guys have places down in Florida or whatever. Like, you know, people, like a lot of the guys, and I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it does feel like during the bye week, a lot of times it's like, well, you know, I went through 6 weeks of training camp and then I went through 7 weeks of the regular season and I just need to get the hell away from all of this for a little bit. You know, like, it feels like that would normally be what it is. And like, even something like that, you're not going to have that this year.
No, it's so bizarre. Like, you just need to see something different, like for your own emotional state, like for your own like mental sanity. You have to see something a little bit different, interact with somebody different than you see every day. Cause as much as you love your teammates, like, it's too much and your coaches are always on you. And so like, you can get away for a couple of days, reset, and then you're good again. You get a little taste of normal society. Like, that's not going to exist this year. And it's going to be interesting how that's going to impact everything. You know, guys that are, you know, grinders that have been doing this for years, it's not going to affect the Tom Brady's. It's not going to affect the, you know, the Drew Brees's. You know, but guys that, you know, like these physically demanding positions, like there's an element to where it's tough to keep sharp, to continue to do the same thing over and over again if you don't ever have a release.
Okay, so let's take all of that into account now. We'll wrap up here. Take every bit of that into account. And I won't bring up Cabo either because I was actually thinking about that.
I knew you were.
Yeah.
I was waiting for it.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, let's take all of this into account, right? Like, give me a couple teams that you think are playing from ahead because of this. Like, which teams do you think are best equipped to manage this and to handle it and to compartmentalize it and to deal with the lows that I think every team faces over the course of the year? Like, who do you look at as teams that you'll be like, that team's going to have armadillo skin through this?
You know, I look at some teams, you know, everybody's going to point to Tampa because they have Tom Brady, mm-hmm. you know, New Orleans because they have Drew Brees. And I do think, you know, having, you know, Bruce Arians, BA, you know, he's an energetic guy, Sean Payton the same way down in New Orleans. You know, but I look at a team like the Baltimore Ravens. They have a young quarterback, Lamar Jackson, showing up. He's going to have juice every single day. And then you have veterans like Calais Campbell out there, too, who guys are hungry to win. And they're going to be able to stay focused. They're going to keep everything together. And, you know, John Harbaugh is a taskmaster. He's very discipline-oriented. You know their special teams are going to be good. And so I look at a team like that, that, you know, this might be an area where they're going to probably have some more inherent advantages than maybe that they would, you know, otherwise. And, I'm, you know, I'm trying to, you know, and believe me, they were really good last year. And sometimes, you know, it's tough to bounce back and come off, you know, a season like that. And you look at the Falcons and, you know, they haven't recovered from their Super Bowl loss yet. But for some reason, I feel like they're better equipped. And this season might actually play into their hands a little bit more than it typically would otherwise.
Yeah. And I think, like, I don't know. I just think, like, Lamar's – there's something about Lamar that's, like, a little different too. Like, there's just – like, he's just such a – he's, like, a genuine normal guy that doesn't seem overwhelmed by all of this at all. Is it the same – it's just, like, there's something about that guy. Like, he's just – like, every day coming to work with him would be fun, it feels like. You know, like it seemed like – and he creates that at practice. And so I'm with you on that. All right, so he you can catch him on ESPN. You can catch him on 97.1 The Fan. Again, the new morning show. From what I've heard of it, it's fantastic. I'm still working on getting permission to call Anthony Schlegel Schlegs too. I don't know if I'm at the point now, but I did slip up and call him that because I heard you guys call him that.
It's all good.
Yeah, I got busted on that one. So you guys can catch him every morning if you're in Columbus on 97.1 The Fan. And he's also the general of the Big Ten Army. And I'm a foot soldier. I'm just a foot soldier. We're trying to get a Big Ten season here played. Bobby, always appreciate you coming out.
Albert, thank you so much, sir. Anytime, man. Love coming on.
Okay, and we'll get to our new special segment right after this. Okay, well, we promised you a new segment this week on the podcast, and we're bringing it to you right now. More specifically, DraftKings is bringing it to you. And to do this the right way, we've got a guy that I actually worked with for a lot of years at NFL Network, and now he's over at SI.com. We couldn't be happier to have him on board. Michael Fabiano, welcome into the podcast.
Hey, it is an absolute pleasure, and it's great to be back working with you, Albert. We had a nice, good relationship there at NFL Network, and now back together at SI. I'm loving it, man.
All right. So here's what we want to do. Every week, we want to give everybody an idea, first of all, what they should be doing with their daily fantasy teams. You can go to DraftKings, take care of all of that business there after you get done listening to us, of course. And so every week, we're going to give you three bargains that are out there for you on the daily fantasy scene. So Fabs, without further ado, take it away. Three bargains for week one in the 2020 NFL season.
Right. And we're thinking this is going to be a high scoring game here in the Kansas City Houston matchup on Thursday night. So we'll focus on that one here. Most people are probably going to put Patrick Mahomes in as their captain, which is going to cost you about $18,900. So there's going to be some players out there that you're going to want to put in the flex positions that aren't as expensive. So one of them that came to mind for me, Randall Cobb at $4,200. He's cheaper than Brandon Cooks. He's cheaper than Will Fuller. And Kansas City was really tough on wide receivers last year, but they weren't as tough against slot receivers. So Randall Cobb is somebody to take a look at. Jordan Akins as well. I mean, he's very cheap at $3,200. Not a household name by any stretch of the imagination, but Kansas City actually gave up the fifth most fantasy points to tight ends, and this looks like a potential high-scoring game. And you look at the line, the Chiefs are laying 9 right now, so game script could end up being in the favor of the Houston Texans. And then finally, a really hot name and high stakes right now is Darrell Williams. Now, I'm on the Clyde Edwards-Helaire bandwagon. I love him, okay? But is Andy Reid going to give him a full workload with no preseason in week one? Maybe not. And Darrell Williams is the number two back in Kansas City, and he's at $1,800 to flex this week. So keep those three players in mind when you're setting your DK lineups.
So you guys know, of course, you know, everybody's excited. Football's here, and we're going to have Fabs with us all year doing this with us. He is talking about – he did make me a little nervous there about my first-round pick. That's Clyde Edwards-Helaire was my first-round pick. in my league with my college buddies, and I actually felt good about it because I got him at 11th overall, and now you're kind of leveling that off a little.
I love him. There was not a better fit for running back in the 2020 draft class than Edwards-Helaire in Kansas City. And everyone had like DeAndre Swift going there, but it wasn't Edwards-Helaire. He wasn't even projected to be a first rounder. But I say this time and time again, every running back in his first year as a featured back in Andy Reid's offense has been an RB10 or better in fantasy. Okay, going back to 1999 and Deuce Staley and Brian Westbrook and LeSean McCoy and Jamaal Charles and Kareem Hunt. Damian Williams, I mean, let's not get it twisted here. He was a bum in Miami. I mean, he was waiver wire fodder in fantasy, and suddenly he goes to Kansas City. Boom. So to me, I feel like Williams is so cheap. He's in a great position in that offense because running backs just flourish in that offense. And this week, maybe Andy Reid's not going to give Clyde Edwards-Helaire 20 touches. Maybe it's more like 15, and maybe there's enough there for Darrell Williams to sneak in some value in DFS, and the price is right.
I'm fired up to see what it looks like, too. I mean, like, Andy Reid, just so everybody knows, has never taken a running back higher than the middle of the second round. That's where he took LeSean McCoy, I think now 11 years ago. So he's never taken a running back in the first round in over 20 years of running football teams. And like Fab said, that offense is so set up for him because this guy was so good in space. And you're going to have Sammy Watkins and Tyreek Hill and Mecole Hardman clearing out space for him underneath. Okay, before we let you go, Fabs, the other thing we're going to do on a weekly basis, we want to give a little juice to the Stardom Sit'em column, which I think you told me off the air was in its 20th year now. Is that right?
This is my 20th year writing this column, dating back to my time at CBS Sports, believe it or not. That was back in 2001 is when I started this column. So we're looking at the 20th year here. There are other columns out there who call themselves Stardom and Sit'em. This is the original, my friend.
It's the original.
That's right.
I don't think I knew that. How about that? Okay, so give people a little flavor for what's in that. We don't want to give away everything because we want you to go to SI.com and check it out. But give people a little flavor for what they're going to find in this week's Stardom Sit'em.
Well, you're going to find the top starts and sits. And we don't talk about Patrick Mahomes and we don't talk about Christian McCaffrey. I mean, we know you're starting those dudes. We're talking about players who maybe are on the border, right? Maybe, I drafted this guy. I like him. I'm not sure about him this week. Or some players who are set up to have really big games that could potentially be guys that you didn't draft to be starters. For example, DeSean Jackson against the Washington football team. He dominates typically his former teams. It's very strange, and the Eagles are banged up at the wide receiver position. So you can check those out at si.com/fantasy. I'm also including some sleepers at certain positions, and I also have my DFS bargains and my DFS fades in that column this year. I wasn't able to do that in past years at NFL.com, Albert, for obvious reasons, but now I can do those kind of things. And so the column now, I'm proud to announce, is going to include some DFS love in there.
Okay, so just to give people an idea, give me one intriguing start and one intriguing sit for week one out of the column.
In DFS, and people are going to think this is crazy, I think Teddy Bridgewater is actually not a bad play against the Raiders this week. And if you want to go a step deeper, Mitchell Trubisky has actually done some pretty good things against Detroit in his career. And I know everyone's crapping all over him, and I get it. All right, I understand that. But you know, there could be some points put up on the board in that game. And Trubisky is a guy that if you're looking to go cheap at the quarterback position, he and Teddy Bridgewater are certainly a couple of those options. Tyrod Taylor, too, is another good play in DFS. And if you're in a redraft where you have a super flex or it's a 2QB league, he is a very, very intriguing player against Cincinnati.
Okay, that's Michael Fabiano. You're going to have the benefit of his 20 years of expertise in this field over the entirety of the 2020 season. And it's going to be a different season, Fabs. I mean, I think it's going to be a challenge for fantasy players, for gamblers. This is going to be a challenging year because we don't know what sort of curveballs are going to come on Thursday and Friday and Saturday of game weeks. And I'm sure you're prepared for all of that too.
Yeah, no question about that. And you're going to be able to find everything on si.com/fantasy. We're actually going to be able to answer your questions if you're a part of a fantasy pro as well. So make sure you go out and check that out. But you're right. We had no preseason to scout any sort of players. I think the biggest thing is how do the rookie wide receivers and tight ends probably not going to have much of an impact from a fantasy perspective, but you know, how are those wide receivers going to fit in, right? This is a different game. It's a different speed in the National Football League than they're used to in college. So how quickly can they acclimate themselves to the next level? The running back positions for the rookies, right? Which guys can pass protect? I mean, if you got a rookie running back who can't pass protect, he's not going to be a three down back in the National Football League. It's just not going to happen, you know, especially if he's getting his quarterback killed. It's just not going to happen. So you have to look at that as well. And also early on in the season, some of these backfield situations, what's going to happen in New England? I mean, we think it's going to be Sony Michel and Rex Burkhead and James White. In Detroit, DeAndre Swift is banged up. You know, they added Adrian Peterson. Kerryon Johnson is in the mix too. So there's a lot that we have to learn. You know, Albert, you and I both know this, man. Mm-hmm. You know, we do this for a living. We're always learning. And especially in this year with COVID-19 and the situation that we've all gone through, man, we're all learning. And week one is going to be very educational for all of us out there in terms of being insiders like you and in terms of talking about fantasy football like me.
Okay, he's Michael Fabiano. Again, be sure to check out his column at SI.com, Stardom Sit'em. That's every single week. We're going to have great fantasy content there for you. And he's going to be brought here to the podcast every week by DraftKings. Fabs, great to have you on.
Yeah, my brother. It's a pleasure, man. I'm looking forward to talking to you next week.
Okay, and we will get to you right after this. All right, thanks to Bobby. Thanks to Fabs. Bobby's always great. Great to have Fabs as part of the show. We're going to jump right into the six-pack. You guys know how this works. Ever since the pandemic started, we went back to doing the six-pack. That means on Tuesday, I put the call out for questions. Every single week, I pick six. If I pick yours, you get a like on Twitter. That means I hit that little heart there, and you get an answer here on the podcast. First question of the week, it comes from Roberto Wears a Mask, and you should too, at Ace and Jasper. Who thought it was fair to have some teams with fans in the seats and others without? Let me guess, it was Jerry, right? Well, Jerry is one of the people that thought it was okay to do that, but I guess that he probably had 31 of his peers that were on board with it too. Roberto, the bottom line here, without question, all right, is that this is going to be a different type of year in general, and there are going to be quirks to this season throughout. And so I think the main thing you want to look at is the revenue shortfall that's looming for everybody. That's not good for owners. And if the more money they lose, the worse it is for the players ultimately, because that's going to play into how the 2021 salary cap is calculated. And so it behooves everybody to try to save every piece of revenue they possibly can. So for the owners and the players, and I know the coaches won't be on board with this because it affects them and doesn't necessarily benefit them, but for the owners and the players, looking at this pragmatically, you say, okay, how can we do our best to try to make up for the revenue shortfall that's coming? And again, that means trying to recover as much revenue as you possibly can. So that means if you can put fans in the stands in Miami and Kansas City and Indianapolis, and it's against the law in LA and San Francisco and Buffalo, well, that's probably what you're going to do, because that's going to help everyone manage what is going to be a tricky situation the next couple of years, stemming from the fallout of all the revenue lost in 2020. So, Roberta, I would tell you, I think everybody, I think all 32 owners are probably on board with the idea of doing this. And I think a lot of the players, if you ask them, will be okay with it too, knowing what the final result will be. Question number two from Raphael Bergeron G. Saints or Bucks win the division? We've already been over this, but thought it was worth answering your question, Raphael, and why I picked the Saints. Maybe dive a little deeper into that here. I just think the Saints are a more complete team. And I look at the Saints roster, I mean, really maybe the one area where there might be a depth issue to some degree is at linebacker, but they've got one of the best in the game there, DeMario Davis. The secondary is very talented in that you have Marshon Lattimore, Janoris Jenkins, Marcus Williams. You look up front, Marcus Davenport, Sheldon Rankins, Cam Jordan. The offensive line's one of the best in football with Tron Armstead and Ryan Ramczyk as the bookends, and two high picks, and Eric McCoy and Cesar Ruiz inside, along with Andres Pete, who was just extended after being a high pick himself. At tight end, you've got Jared Cook. At receiver, you've got Michael Thomas and Traquan Smith, a player they really like, and you've got a veteran addition in Emmanuel Sanders. And then you've got Drew Brees at quarterback, and you've got Alvin Kamara at running back, and there just aren't a lot of holes in the roster. So that's what I would tell you. I have a hard time poking holes in what the Saints are going to be from a roster standpoint. The Bucs, you know, you need the young secondary to come along. You need Tristan Wirfs to play well at right tackle. There's just a lot more variables with the Bucs roster than there is with the Saints. Question number three from Derek Robbins. That's at Coach Deke. Any chance the Steelers stay healthy, overcome their coaching staff, and actually live up to the talent on their roster? Derek, I think that they're going to really benefit from last year. As I said with Gresh, having gone through what they went through in 2019, I think winds up being a benefit for them now. They'd become very reliant, I'd say, over the years on Ben Roethlisberger. Well, last year they couldn't be, and they had to cycle through Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph. And I think that forced other parts of their team to grow up. They're very good on the offensive line, and it looks to me like the defense is finally fixed. And you've got ascending young players, guys like Minkah Fitzpatrick and Devin Bush and T.J. Watt, in addition to some mainstays, guys like Cam Hayward and Stephon Tuitt, and now I'd say Joe Hayden's in that category too. It's a team that can win on defense again, which they haven't been able to do for a while, which means they don't need Ben Roethlisberger to be, you know, Ben Roethlisberger from 7 years ago. They just need him to be a lot better than what they have had a quarterback last year, which he's fully capable of being. Question number four from Jack. That's at Jay Blanco. Giants really good or really bad? I don't see them in the middle. Well, Jack, I think you might find them in the middle when we get a little deeper into the year. There are questions, of course, on the defensive side of the ball from a talent perspective. How are they going to hold up with two or three rookies starting on the offensive line? I think that's a fair question. But I do like the buy-in that Joe Judge is getting for all of the crap that he got for the laps and all of that stuff. I really feel like you look at where they are and what they've been through. I think that that's going to be the sort of team that's going to be a tough out on a week-to-week basis. Once we get to October and November, it may take them a little while to get their feet underneath them. But I think you're probably looking at a 6 or 7 win team that's pretty competitive all the way through. Question number five from Reese Hitch. That's at Reese Hitch. Why won't there ever be a Super Bowl Saturday? Reese, I really like this question from you. The reason why Saturday is traditionally a really bad ratings night. Sunday night is traditionally a really good ratings night. And so people are conditioned to watch football on Sunday. And, you know, the ratings across the board on television are better. Now, you may say to me, well, you know, isn't the Super Bowl immune from those sorts of things? Well, sure it is. It would put up a huge rating no matter where you put it. You could put it on a Monday afternoon and it would put up a big rating. But the thing is, they don't care about me and you, the people who are really locked in and watching football when it comes to a game like that. They want to bring in the fringe fan who could either take it or leave it. They want the person who, you know, might be watching freaking Masterpiece Theater or Dateline or whatever else on a normal night. They want that fan because that's what boosts the ratings. That's what takes them to another level. And that fan is probably more likely to stay in and watch that on a Sunday night than they would be to stay in and watch that on a Saturday. Finally, question number six from Dorito Dink. At Dorito Dink 69, why are you losing your mind over the Big Ten playing? Well, they're not playing right now. Hopefully they'll play by the end of the week. I'm not losing my mind over it, but I will say this. There are a lot of good people working really, really hard on this, and I think that the things that you're going to be costing a lot of the kids by not playing, it sucks, man. It really sucks. And there are players on some of these rosters that can literally play themselves from, say, the third round to the first round. I'll give you three examples. The receiver from Ohio State, Chris Olave, is one. The tight end from Penn State, Pat Freiermuth, is another. And the defensive end from Michigan, Quiddy Pay, would be a third. All three of those players, I think, have first-round level talent, but probably need another year of putting it on the field to get there. And if you want to look at the difference between what a first-rounder and a third-rounder makes, there's differences in the money guaranteed and the amount of money that's guaranteed. There's also an enormous difference in the gross total. And so, you know, I think for guys like Freiermuth, for guys like Olave, for guys like Quiddy Pay, there is a ton of money to be made out there. I think all three of those guys could be top 20 picks, and I'm not sure that they would go in the first round if they didn't play in 2020. So for those guys, I think giving them the option to play, that's why I feel really strongly about that. And if there wasn't a safe way to play, then that'd be one thing. But one thing that the last few months have taught me, and seeing the NFL handle this. And again, they've had, I think, 5 positive tests across the NFL, 2,700 players getting tested every day since they went into pads, or since they actually started like real football practice with the OTA type stuff. Then they went into pads a few days after that. They've had 5 of 2,700 players test positive. That is an insanely low total. Well, how did that happen? Because they could test and test and test. You can't get COVID in the building. You can't spread COVID within your building if you don't let COVID in your building. And that's what testing allows you to do. It allows you to prevent COVID from coming in the building. And quite honestly, if daily testing is there, I don't think there's a real reason why you shouldn't give the kids a chance to play and give certain programs. Hey, if a program wants to opt out, fine. If players want to opt out, fine. Everybody should have that right. But, I think you're taking away something that's a golden opportunity for a lot of kids. Appreciate you guys coming out. We are going to kind of have some moving parts here the next few weeks. So I'll keep you guys posted on that with the different feeds and everything else. We're still figuring out how all of that's going to work. But again, I'll keep you posted on all of that and how all that's going to work. And I want your feedback too, because we are going to be adjusting some things as we go here this year with my podcast, whether it's on a separate feed or stays on this feed. You guys know where to get me: at Albert Breer on Twitter, at Albert R. Breer on Facebook, at Albert_Breer on Instagram. And regardless of how it's set up, you guys should be listening to all of our podcasts: Gary's Pod on Monday mornings, Jenny and Connor's Pod on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And for now, we'll still be doing the Weekend Review podcast on Fridays, as far as I know. And you guys know where to find us. Again, whether it's on one feed, two feeds, whatever it is, you'll be able to find us on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. We'll be there same time next week. We'll have some games to talk about then. See you guys.
Plan on flying? It's time to upgrade to a Real ID. Because in order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a Real ID, or you'll need another acceptable form of identification. So don't wait. Find out how to get your Real ID at tsa.gov/Real ID. That's tsa.gov/Real ID. Or visit your local DMV. And then you'll be cleared for takeoff.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why My Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only, 5/8 through 5/14. Limit 1 per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.